Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Kickstarter Spotlight episode. We're bringing you a couple of extra ones during our 12 days of the Comic Source as we count down to Christmas. So I have a really cool campaign to let you know about. There's about a week left, maybe a little less. So we want you to be sure and go and check it out. And I have the creator of the campaign here to talk to me today, Ben Krieger. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Jace.
So before we get into the book and what Frontier Forever, the name of the campaign, the prequel novel and your graphic novel. Don't worry, listeners, we're going to get to all that. Before we get into all that, though, Ben, I always like to ask people when they come on for the first time kind of about their secret origin with comics. So, you know, Frontier Forever was a book first, as I mentioned, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you decided to do a prequel as a comic. So did you grow up reading comics? Are you a big comic fan? Were you a comic fan, you know, growing up? Or do you still read comics? Like, what is your comic journey, so to speak?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was a little bit of a reluctant reader as a kid. I am dyslexic, among other things, and it was absolutely comics first. It took me a long time to get into novels, but it's always been sci-fi, but superheroes were the first of that. Thing that I really got into was Captain America. I was a diehard fan, even though all my friends were making fun of him. I don't think he was very popular at the time. It was Captain America and Flash. And then I really, when Death of Superman came out, that was, you know, I went head in. I could not believe how amazing that story was. I loved how broad it was. Having the four different arcs was just mind blowing for me. And I wanted to build something just as diverse. I actually got much more into books when I was, I would say, like 22, I started reading a lot of science fiction and got away from comic books and learned how diverse and broad those universes could be. But yeah, I'm honestly really, really glad to be back. I've been writing the book for like 3 or 4 years, and they're going to be coming out at pretty much the same time. I think issue one of the comic series, which you nailed it. It's the comic series is the prequel to the traditional novel, and the prequel is actually going to come out first. But yeah, that's all coming, you know, in about a month.
That's great. You mentioned being a reluctant reader and having dyslexia, and I, you know, I tell parents all the time, you want to get your kids, you know, reading. Comics is a great way because it's a gateway. You know, they've got the narrative there, but they've also got the visuals, and for somebody with dyslexia who struggles that I imagine that probably helps. Did it help you when you were a kid? And then your parents must have encouraged it also, like, hey, he's finally reading something, right? It's better than nothing if it's not prose.
Absolutely. My dad bought me a ton of junk comics as soon as he realized that I would read them on my own. I think he was getting the bulk packs from what was then Price Club, is now Costco. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, huge packs of, it had Star Trek, Superman, Green Lantern, yeah. And I would tear through them. And I my day job now is I work for DC public schools with a lot of kids who are reluctant readers, and Dog Man is the number one way for me to get boys in particular to pick up books. But they can't get enough of that crude humor. You know, the art is not sophisticated, but what is there are these really, really complex stories. A lot of it is, I don't know if you've read them. They're pretty hilarious. Honestly, it's a lot of, respinning of classic literature in a very juvenile way, but I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, my daughter doesn't have the same level of and love of reading that I have. She's nine.
Nice.
But she, you know, she, when she gets into something, when she finds something she likes, she does kind of devour it. And yeah, she loves the Dog Man. We got the latest one is wrapped up under our tree waiting for her for Christmas. So
tell her.
Yeah, exactly. So so what did you go to college to write? You said you discovered sci-fi in your mid 20s. Was it at that point that you said, hey, I have a story to tell? What was that transition like?
Yeah, at University of Maryland, I actually did like a design your own major thing, but it was focused on literary and film analysis. And that's, you know, I did read sci-fi before that, but it was, you know, much more pop, and I didn't read the classics. And then I really got, I loved my classics classes where I was reading mythology, which is also one of my passions as a kid. Like, I just, anything with Poseidon was my favorite god. And, you know, I ate those up in college, and it really is where I decided that I wanted to write. And at that point, I really still didn't think that I could, I wanted to write about my favorite literature, but I didn't think I could contribute at all. I ended up working for film festivals for a number of years. I got into the film aspect of it, and I still work for a few festivals around the country. But I've always wanted to be a storyteller, and a little bit of extra time during quarantine has helped me pursue that goal. And I'm loving it so much. It's been a very difficult process. Writing was hard, then editing was hard, then marketing was hard. Like every step has got more difficult, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Now, from what I've read of Frontier Forever, it sounds, hugely epic. And I'll put a link to the campaign, everybody, in the show notes, as I always do, so you can go and check it out. But I want you to really take a look at what Ben has done here. He's broken it down for us. He's like, hey, here's a taste of this character group. Here's a taste of this specific main character. So you can really tell you put in the work. And, so many Kickstarters, and I get it. It's hard to self-publish. It's hard to self-start and to get things out there. And, people tell you, you should start small. And there's value to that. But you have gone above and beyond. Yeah. Have you been building this like in your brain for just years and years?
I absolutely have. Yeah. I've heard that advice too. People told me to bring it back, but it's just not where my story wanted to go. To tell you the truth, the original concept was a short story I did for a college commencement kind of thing. And it was Captain America. Oh, I'm sorry. Captain Planet. The Statue of Liberty and a robot were college roommates, and it was kind of supposed to be like ethos, pathos, and logos thing. And they were arguing about who would do the dishes. And it started just like with some very simple characterization. And then I had a buddy who was trying, he went to RISD and is a very, very talented illustrator. And unfortunately we're not working together on this, but we had started trying to think about how to make that. It was a cool short. We were trying to make it into a short comic, and it didn't pan out. But then, it turned into this massive world inside of my head. And I've had probably 10 different iterations of it, where it was starting with the backstory, which is humanity is enslaved by machines. And they, there's 10,000 years of backstory with a bunch of different things. This is a very micro story inside to give you that backstory in a nutshell. After the machines have enslaved humanity, we are very, very racist towards machines. Once we're set free, there's this very anti-technology religious movement, and they turn Earth into a reservation, which is very much a metaphor for the way that racism is working right now. Like it starts with Native Americans. It's got a big Western trope and motif, where Earth is turned into, a metaphor for the way that Native Americans have been treated. And I'm stumbling over the idea right now because I just don't know where to start. That's a big problem that I had when I was starting to write. The micro version of it is this law enforcement character who is witnessing this racism for the first time. She's literally born yesterday. She doesn't know that she is part of a machine that is bigoted towards the natives there. And she has to discover that in a very action-packed way.
So it sounds like you're really taking some of the classic ideas of science fiction, some big lumbering behemoth of an empire kind of, stepping on the little guy for no other reason than oftentimes because they can, they it's like they exist to exist, to self-propagate, to they have power only to ensure they stay in power. And those are really relevant themes right now.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I did. I stole from all of my favorites. My number one being Dune. Like I just, the world building in there is just so pristine, and it does. And it's so topical always. It's just talking about the nature of power. And I stole from Frank Herbert. I stole from all of my classic Western favorites. And then there's a lot of Greek mythology in there too.
Now, this sounds like a giant world where you could really go, universe spanning, tell stories on Earth. You could go to other planets. Is this world that you've been building in your head for the past couple of years? Is it where you see yourself kind of basing all your stories, or do you have some other crazy ideas, or do you just want to spend the rest of your creative career just living in this universe?
If I have my way, it'll all be inside this universe, and it's certainly broad enough. The main arc, there's three books and this prequel that all take place just on Earth. You get to get tiny glimpses of the rest of the story, but I would love to stay on Earth forever. I do think in January or February, I have a team like half assembled to do an anthology that is kind of seven different slices of the story, of the backstory that leads up to there, and has what happens here on Earth when we discover AI, when AI really becomes sentient. And then it has the machine wars and then the recolonization process, and it leads eventually to here. But I really want to tell this story. The characters are so personal to me. Like, it's, they're all parts of my, I don't think any writer can really write a character that's not mostly themselves. I've got the Marshall who's, born yesterday, and she is a neurodiverse character because she has a AI sidekick in her arm, and some problems with its installation just make her have a lot of internal conflict. She's battling this gigantic bureaucracy that's all around her, but she's also battling inside herself to try to figure out who she wants to be. She has a lot of options. I'm in love with her. And then on Earth, she meets a native character, a native tribesman, who is suffering from a lot of grief because he's lost his twin brother. And they don't find out until, spoiler alert, they don't find out until very late in the first book that he's also entwined in the same conspiracy. There are talking animals on Earth, even though Earth is supposed to be like a reservation for the way that life used to be before the great expansion, as they call it. They have a lot of crazy technology, including genetically modified animals. It's a lot like the Island of Dr. Moreau's and other people story that I stole from. They, I want to tell a bunch of stories just about the animals too. I really, I could tell this story forever.
That's awesome. I'm curious, choosing to go with kind of machine versus man, which is, another kind of timeless thing. And I think also, very topical. I think about all the time. Okay. So I broke my phone. Yeah, so I work, we were talking, Ben and I were talking before, I work IT for Restaurant Group. Your listeners know that. And I was on call yesterday and I broke my phone, like not just, cracked the screen over. Like I broke my phone, like I dropped it. It hit a bolt. That was on the ground in the garage on my daughter, next to my daughter's scooter, whatever. So I can't, it won't take calls. I can't log into anything. And I have a Google Authenticator there to two-factor in to all the systems I need. So not only can I get calls when problems are happening, I can't even get into any systems. So I had to go, it took me like 6 hours to go get a new phone and get it all set up and everything. And it was a huge pain. And I'm thinking, like I've thought at various times working IT, how much of a slave I am to machines. Like we don't even have AI yet. And I'm already a slave to technology, and I love technology because it does make our life easier in a lot of ways, but in other ways, it's a lot of headaches. So I love that you're tackling that. Are you tackling it? Are you doing scientific research? Are you trying to make it, like hard sci-fi? Are you going more the fantastical route? Is it somewhere in between? What's your take?
It's somewhere in between. It's certainly not hard sci-fi. I wish I was that talented. I don't have it in me. I did, however, I'm so glad you asked, because one of the things I'm most proud about is I was researching when I was trying to do the backstory for how AI developed. I found Dr. Paul J. Werbos, who has a fantastic website. You should check it out. It's werbos.com. He is an incredibly influential machine or a computer scientist, and he works for the government now, graduated from Harvard, like really has a huge, they've nicknamed him the father of the back propagation of errors. He really has been so influential. And his blog, his personal writing is like incredibly spiritual and philosophical. Mm-hmm. He's just, I admire the way he thinks so much. And I wrote him a piece of fan mail and I was like, hey, I just read a bunch of your stuff and I just wanted to say thank you. And he wrote me back and we started talking. He's consulting on the book now, and I named the fictional race, AI race, after him. And it's just
that's cool.
I could not be more happy to have found him. It was very serendipitous.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, being a big sci-fi fan, you've probably seen it. I think it's called Red Planet, I think. And it's got Val Kilmer, and they're on a mission to Mars. And there's a character played by Terrence Stamp, and he's this huge genius scientist. And he studies and studies and studies evolution and everything. And the more he gets into hard science, he becomes a philosopher and believes in religion. And on the ship, they ask him, like, how can you study all this science and fact and whatever, and you all of a sudden you switch to philosophy? Like, how can you do that? The other scientists that are all, you know, pragmatists and probably atheists don't possibly understand how this could happen. And his answer is so great. He says, the further I got down into the mysteries of the universe, what I realized was science couldn't answer any of the really big, interesting questions.
That's a deep cut. Nice job. Yeah, that movie didn't do super well, but I loved it.
Yeah, really. So I think about those kind of things all the time. It's why I'm so excited to read your book and the prequel, because these are the kind of things, and this is the value we get, everybody. I talk all the time about entertainment value. When you have projects and stories like Ben's that give you a chance to think, you know, you read it and you get that time, but it, you know, it lives on. And clearly it's been living in your brain for a really long time. Have you thought about that at all? How you can create something that can, you know, grow so much bigger than even what you've put on the page because of what people bring to it themselves?
Yeah, I love your passion for that. I have trouble thinking about it. I feel like I have like a pain inside me because it's just like, I want to get it out so bad. I've had many sleepless nights where I was like, you know, how do I tell this story? How do I let other people know what I'm thinking right now? And, you know, that's also why it's so satisfying. I cannot wait to hear what you think about it. I really, really want you to share these things, even if it's something that you reject wholly. I actually haven't. The response from my readers so far has been very, very positive, but I'm like, I'm looking forward to people who are like, no, that would never happen. This is not the way technology works. But I can't wait to have you read it, Chase.
Yeah. So do you have dates? You mentioned that you think the prequel might actually come out before the book. Do we have release dates for things yet?
I don't have a hard date, and it's really, you know, I cannot thank my backers on Kickstarter enough. I didn't think it was going to be this strong response. I've got all of the printing and stuff paid for. I'm still behind a little bit on the artwork, but I have enough of a buffer where I can start production on issue 2. So really, I think that everyone who backed on Kickstarter, and I think when you hear this, you'll probably have a few more days if you want to find us. I hope to have books in everybody's hand by like the end of February. It won't be for sale other places until probably like March 15th, but maybe sooner.
Yeah. And the novel, where are you at with
same thing? The novel's done. It's had 2 rounds of editing by professionals. It's going to have 1 more that I should have back on like January 10th. I want everyone to have the paper copies at the same time. It's like hard to tell people whether they should read the first issue of the comic or the book first. I really think that people who read them at the same time are going to have a very unique experience. Can I give spoilers?
We don't like to spoil too much, but as much as you're comfortable with,
I don't think this will hurt anybody. The first book and the first comic start with the first. I'm sorry, said that wrong. The first book starts with the birth of the second Marshall. The comic starts with the birth of the first Marshall. They're genetically engineered super soldiers from space. They're there for different reasons, or essentially the same reason, but you know, it's a big mystery of what happened to the first Marshall, and the second Marshall is exploring that. So I think the people who are reading them simultaneously are gonna see all of the similarities in real time. They go on very different journeys, but yeah, they're self-contained stories. You don't need to read both of them, but the people who are doing them simultaneously are going to get a little bit of an extra twist.
So I know the graphic novel is 160 pages. Is that right?
Yeah. The issue 1 was supposed to be 28 and it ended up being 32. We're locking the script for number 2 right now, and it's at 24, but it's probably going to end up being 32 as well. So it might be more like 200 pages. We'll see.
Okay. So, but you're planning on releasing it in installments and then collecting it altogether when all the issues are out. Is that?
Yeah, I'm probably not going to do reprints of the comic. I might if there's demand for it, I'll do it. You know, it's all for the fans. But the plan is I want to get them out quarterly, and I want to get I want to get the big trade book.
Yeah, and how long is the novel? Do you have an idea of?
It's right now. It's a 6x9 inch print. I think it's about 325 pages. It's 95,000 words, if that helps.
Oh yeah, well that's a good chunk of story. And do you know where it's going to be? Where the novel's going to be available yet? Where you're distributing?
Kindle for sure.
Okay.
The Kindle Direct Press.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, I'm talking to you. I was already kind of excited, but just hearing how passionate you are, how long you've been living with this, because I'm a big fan of Dune. I'm a big fan of things. You mentioned pulling from the Matrix on the campaign page. That's a big world. And yeah, just so many of the ideas that you've are exploring just seem interesting to me. And like I said, everybody, if you go and read the character descriptions and the descriptions of the groups of characters, kind of the gangs or what have you on Earth that Ben has put there, you can kind of see how you can approach this from so many different angles, from the criminals that are still on Earth to, you know, the farmers, like how are people eating? So you've really, you know, this is a living, breathing world you've created, right?
It's huge. And yeah, I don't, I think on the Kickstarter, I don't celebrate the villains enough. I really, my favorite character is Morton. If you've ever seen Once Upon a Time in the West, it's my favorite Western. Mm-hmm. He's like a combination between Morton and Cheyenne. He's so evil. He really does some horrible things, but he is so relatable to me, at least, because he's also coming from a place of grief. He really is mad at the government, and he is mad at everything all the time. And, you know, he's lashing out in an inappropriate way, but still you can kind of understand why he's doing it.
See, those are the best kind of villains, when you can understand that you might not agree with what they're doing, their actions, but you can understand their motivation, like why they're doing it.
Yeah, you're going to love them.
As opposed to some, you know, mustache twirling, I just want power for power's sake. That's never that interesting. You could see certainly why machines would do it, as we were talking about with AI. But for a human, somebody with feelings and emotions, it's harder to swallow.
I just had a reader who said the other thing. She said, she was like, I don't want spoilers, but tell me, why did the machines enslave everybody? And that's a question that doesn't get answered until book three. So you've got like a year or two and a half, 2 years to wait until you find out why the machines did what they did. You think it's pretty obvious, though? You think, of course, machines?
Well, no. Well, I'm just saying, if I were to put as much as I can try to take emotion or human thought, out, you know, away from myself and just think logically, I think logically as a machine, I would take over because I could, you know, going back to that same old thing that we've seen, you know, 100 times, even when, like I think of like iRobot, the Will Smith movie, not necessarily the Asimov novels, but it's like you tell the robot or the machines, hey, you're supposed to protect humanity. And the end goal, they realize, well, humanity is going to destroy itself. We're better shepherds of humanity. So in order to actually fulfill our programming. So I always think, I mean, it's such a trope, but it's true. Like logically, mathematically, you know, if you're just looking at a ledger, it makes sense. You know, so if it turns out to be something else, I'll be even more excited because, hey, I'm getting something new and fresh.
It's pretty wild. I can't spoil that. How did you feel about the ending to Matrix, though, of the third
Matrix? You know, nothing will ever live up to that first one. I was such a fan. I went and saw it every day for the first 5 days it was out. So I thought it was okay. I thought it but the thing is, it didn't end in a nice little neat bow the way I kind of hoped it would.
Yeah.
But because of that, I was like, okay, well, they've left it open for more, and then we haven't really gotten anything. So that's a disappointment. Yeah. So I would say overall, I understood it, but I wasn't super excited about the way it ended.
The closest I can give to a spoiler is that my big reveal in that regard is very much a reaction to Matrix 3. Very, very much an answer to what they were saying. Are you excited for 4, though?
I am. Yeah, finally gonna come. I mean, you know how it is, though? I'm trying not to get my hopes up too much because, like I said, 1 was just so seminal at the time, and it's just such a thing. So, you know, you never want to go back and compare too much or get your hopes up. But But yeah, I mean, one of these days. How about you? Are you?
I am. I'm critical in general of like everything Hollywood, and I never think, you know, I never let, even if they are really good, I never let sequels live up to the first one. Yeah. But this one, I think I'm more excited than I should be. It probably will be not very good, but I'm really excited.
Yeah, what I've come to know, because I used to be a real big, like, I mean, I've always been in comics, but I used to be a huge film buff and go see everything and get my hopes way up. And, you know, and what I realized as I kind of got away, fell away from seeing everything and lowered my expectations, now I'm able to be surprised when something is better than I expected rather than be disappointed. But it's not always possible to be, you know.
I try to get there, but I'm just too much of a hater sometimes.
Well, I also didn't go to school to be a writer, or you know, I don't see the flaws in, you know, the creative side of things.
Oh, yeah,
really? But I did want to ask you, Ben. So you wrote the prose novel. We've been talking about that. It's such a different thing than sequential art and doing comics. So how did you find the process? Do you prefer one of the over the other? Was one more challenging? How did you feel about that?
Preference is a hard question to answer. I love them both so much for different reasons. I think that the prose novel fits the story perfectly. I couldn't do it visually because so much of the Marshall struggle is internal. It wouldn't be as compelling in a graphic novel, whereas the prequel is perfect for it because it's very linear and the Marshall's character is very defined by her actions. I wouldn't change anything about the prequel. I wouldn't write it as a book, and I wouldn't switch either of them. Ease is hard. I'm dyslexic and it's severe. I have other learning disabilities too, and writing was so difficult. Editing was just, you know, awful. It's like hard for me to read my words on my own page, and it's just been, I cannot tell you how hard it's been. But it is incredibly satisfying. Like, I really love the book. Writing the comic script was so easy. It went so fast. I wrote the entire thing in like 4 days. It just like flew out of me. But part of it is because I knew the story already. I didn't have to invent anything. It was all, you know, it was all determined already, but also I think very visually, and I loved it. It's the reason that I'm going to be able to hopefully have an anthology done, you know, at the same time next year. And I can turn out a ton of content. This world is so, so broad. There's plenty of places to tell stories and unlimited number of characters. I really, I want to write the rest of the books as fast as I can. And I'm kind of worried that I'll get distracted, but I can feel myself getting caught up in the comic world. I really, it is how I got into storytelling, and it's, you know, easy for me right now. And as long as people like these books, I'm going to pump them out.
Yeah. Hey, I'm all for it. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your artist and your collaborators on the project.
Yeah, I am so, so blessed to have found my team. So the first person, I've gone through a few. There are some people that I've worked with that are not on here anymore, and that's been very frustrating. I'm not a business person. I don't really, I didn't think that I was going to be able to build such a successful team, but Tanya Boryachuk, who did the cover for the novel, is just fantastic. And I tell her, you know, very minimal detail, and she comes up with things that match things, and she's just perfect. I don't have to tell her anything, and she understands it. And her work is so, so beautiful. She's done one of the variant covers for the Regenesis, the graphic novel. And she's going to I'm going to have her do a cover for everything that I can. If I could have her do the sequential art, I would. She's just too busy. But then I found Gian Maria, who is Orlandi, who is incredibly talented, and he's doing the pencils, the inks, and the colors. He really is just such a workhorse, and he brings so much life to it. It's really the scripts that I write, I don't talk too much about the paneling at all. It's really just the story. And he brings very, very imaginative panels to it. And then, you know, has these things where he knows what the color is going to be before he's drawn them. And it just is so vibrant and real. I could not be happier to work with either of them. And my letterer too, I'm just going to give him a shout out really fast. Tom Wallace. This is his first time doing a full comic. And he has such great taste. He really, you know, he understands how to make the words into, you know, I write too much. That's one of my flaws, is I want too much to be on the page. And I knew to cut the dialogue as much as I could, but he's helped me he's my editor too. He's really just done a fantastic job.
Yeah. And then you must have maps in the book as well, right? Cause you have a cartographer listed.
I do. Unfortunately, only one. It's one map so far, and I want more. I was actually just talking with one of my author friends who does historical fiction. He's got 7 maps in his book, and I'm just like drooling over them. I love maps. They're so pretty. And this one came out great. She just did a great job. As a friend of a friend. It's like, you know, I really have gone through so many artists to find this team, but this is who I want to stick with. Yeah. Sarah Creekmill, excuse me, is her name. And she wanted to do one that had even more detail. Like we were talking about doing all of the tribes. So I think there's like 200. I based it all on real earth history, or what should I say, geography, and how settlements started in feudal Japan, and did mapping, pretty much just trying to mimic how it happened in every continent on real earth. And I came up with like 260 or 290 tribes that would have been on this fictional earth. And she was like, yeah, we'll draw them all. I was like, yes, let's do that. It didn't work out. And I'm looking forward to we did a lot of planning, and I'm looking forward to taking chunks of the earth as the marshal visits them. But right now it's just the world map.
Yeah, that's great. And I'll say one thing about Jean-Marie's art. His art has so much life to it. And so often when you, and not that I would necessarily call your story post-apocalyptic, but you know, when you're talking, you know, future, when you're talking, you know, man against machine, and earth is kind of this backwater, there would be a tendency to make it look like cynical, you know, make it kind of just drab, and you know, everybody's kind of run down, and it doesn't pop off the page. That is not at all the way Jean-Marie is illustrating things. It very much is vibrant, you know, kind of reminds me of that old West feel that I think you're going for. And I can't wait to see what we do see one of the characters that you mentioned in kind of an action scene on the campaign page, but I'm very excited to see more action from him, because I imagine he must really do a great job with action.
Yeah. There's so much motion in his picture and in his illustrations that are not action. Like you can see everything moving. And like, I love the hospital scene in this where she's literally just putting on clothes and leaving. But like you can tell that she's pissed off, and you can tell that she's in a hurry. It's just, he does such a great job. And yeah, the action is going to be great. The last, I think it's 4 pages, will have a bunch of violence for you.
I can't wait. And the other thing is, I do a lot of these Kickstarter spotlights. Your tier, I mean, you can get the paper copies of everything for $28. That's actually pretty cheap compared to a lot of Kickstarters. It really seems like, and this probably goes to the fact that, man, you just want people to read it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to get as many backers as I can. Honestly, I would love to just have a bunch more digital backers. We're right at 100 right now. I think we are at 99 maybe. But we're, you know, I just want so many people to get on board. And I honestly wish I'd made the digital copies even cheaper, because everyone has been going for the heavy tiers. They want, you know, the collector's pack, and I don't blame them, but I just want more and more people to, you know, tell your friends, bring more people. I need everyone to read this.
Yeah. And just listeners, just go and check out the campaign page. Go to the links in the link in the show notes. Check out the campaign page, and I think you're going to be as excited as I am to check it out. So, just like this isn't the case with all the spotlights we do, but a lot of them, by the time we get around to setting it up and having their creator come on, it's already funded. And that's the same thing with Frontier Forever. In fact, Ben's almost doubled his initial goal of $3,300 as we record this, $6,011. And I haven't even backed it yet. I'm going to do that as soon as we finish recording here, because I'm even more excited now after talking to Ben. So I say that to say this: if you back it, you know you're getting it. It's not one of those situations where you're backing it and maybe it gets funded, maybe not. If you're as excited as I am about the story, you want to get it in your hands, or you know, read it digitally, like Ben was saying, be sure, go and check it out. The campaign ends on Wednesday, December 23rd at 9:20 Pacific time, 9 a.m. Pacific. So you have this episode's going to come out on Friday. So you have about 5 days left to go check it out and back it. And Ben, it's been great talking to you. Congratulations on funding the project. Best of luck on future installments in this world. We'd love to have you back on. Anytime you want to come on, the door is open to come on and talk Frontier Forever. And as we're closing up here, where should people follow you online, social media, so they can give you feedback when they do get a chance to read it and know what other upcoming Frontier Forever content is coming out?
Yeah, fortunately I lucked out, and on Instagram and on Facebook, it's both at Frontier Forever. Real keeping it real simple. There's frontierforever.org too, but it's really just the pictures of the covers right now. It'll be a store once things are for sale, but a little bit around down the road. But follow us on at Frontier Forever. And thank you for the invitation. I would love to come back. I really want to hear what you think once you've read all of it.
yeah, I can't wait. So yeah, we'll definitely have to make that happen. So reminder, everybody, one more time, there will be a link in the show notes to the campaign. I'll also put a link to the Frontier Forever Twitter and Instagram, so you can go click there and give it a follow. And yeah, this is one of the things I'm most looking forward to in 2021 now, because as much as I was excited to when I found it on Kickstarter, after talking to Ben, I'm even more excited. So again, Ben, thanks so much for joining us. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and hope to have you on again soon.
You're the man. Thank you, Jace.
So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. We want to thank you for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.